Forum Opéra. Émission spéciale.
Et nous sommes aujourd'hui avec Jakub Józef Orliński, le contre-ténor, probablement parmi les contre-ténors les plus célèbres de l'univers. Et désormais, Jakub, bonjour.
Bonjour.
Vous avez accepté de dire bonjour en français, on va continuer en anglais. Before we talk about all the exciting things, the new album, but also this Aix-en-Provence video which went viral and who helped a lot, I imagine, let's discuss about the beginning. Where does it all start?
I started as a young boy in an amateur choir. It's quite funny because I got there kind of by chance. There was just like one woman conductor, like going from school to school, auditioning little boys. So I went through that audition process, and it's very easy. You just sing a little song, whatever you want, and then they're inviting you for the chorus. And back then I thought like, oh my gosh, I won, I got the like this invitation, but actually they were giving it to everybody.
Oh, that's awful. So, you felt, you know, special,
like,
and then
I felt special, but anyways, I know the reality, there are not so many people are actually willing to go to a choir, so that's why they're trying to give a chance to as many people as possible. Anyways, I started there in an amateur choir, and I don't know, like my passion for music grew with this choir and very good directors, Berenika Jozaitis, the conductor, and her husband Leszek Kubiak, and they actually made a huge impact on my later career, because my favorite ensemble was the King Singers, and I wanted to be one of them. So like, that was my goal at the beginning.
But what age are you then?
I was like 12 probably.
So that is just before puberty.
I was singing as a boy alto, and then a little bit for just a moment as a soprano. But then after the mutation of my voice, I sang for a moment in the men's vocal ensemble as a bass baritone, because we were doing just medieval chants and then Renaissance pieces. So then we needed kind of like this those countertenor voices, and we did kind of a little lottery, you know, but like it was kind of obvious that me and my friend Piotr, because we were the youngest, we are going to sing as countertenors. But back then I didn't even know that you can call it a countertenor voice.
I imagine. Do you have anything left of that baritone voice?
Of course. I mean, like, you can probably hear that I speak very low, so yes. I sometimes sing like this entertaining music, like pop songs and all that
under
stuff.
The shower, you're being a big exactly. Bass baritone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what happens basically during puberty? Because I imagine for a choir boy it must be quite a difficult period. Something goes away and then you don't really know what you can rely on.
The thing is that like I had friends in the choir that really struggled, because when they were talking it's like it's really horrible, and I didn't have anything like that. I had just like my voice dropped, and that's it. That was just like in a moment, and I didn't have any problems. I had to kind of figure out again how to use the new technique of like falsetto, but beside that I didn't have any kind of struggles with my voice being weird or lasting, like, because my friend had this kind of problem for a year almost.
Yeah. Have the boys in your school or your friends started questioning the fact that you were singing as a contratenor? You know how little boys can be cruel. How did you manage that?
It is a cruel thing. And I remember very well that like many times I was laughed at, and that's just how it is. Like back then there were some people who were like not really appreciating this kind of art form. But I don't know, like I just found it as my second family, and I felt so comfortable and so kind of passionate and inspired, and like this kind of thing, music brought me the motivation to do other things. And I was at that time I was also like a skateboarder, and I did a lot of stuff. Later on I was working for a streetwear company called Turbo Color, and people were really weirdly looking sometimes at this kind of thing, that I'm like so much like grounded in the hip hop community with skateboarding, like street art, streetwear, and street dancing, and then I'm singing in a choir like Renaissance pieces. But actually I also gave them the chance to actually look at that thing, look at that different kind of part of the world, which is also very interesting.
And Polish society, which is one of the most fascinating, can also be one of the most conservative ones. I imagine in that frame it must not always be easy to be a special boy.
Yeah, the thing is that like when I started finally singing solo at my university, because you know I didn't know what to do with my life, kind of, because all of my like my whole family, they're artists, like architects, painters, graphic designers. So I went to this high school where you learn how to draw, how to like paint. Whoa. But I was really horrible. Like I was, for 3 years of that high school, I was extremely horrible.
So
everybody was
not going to ask you to draw something.
No, please don't. I still draw in a way like a 6 year old. So people were laughing at me, but I was just like, I talked to my main teacher and I said, on my third grade of high school, I said like, I'm sorry, I'm gonna study to get into music university because it's senseless. I just cannot find it. Like this is not my thing. So I wanted to go to my music university in Warsaw to become a better singer in the ensemble. So then one day maybe I can audition for the King Singers.
Yeah.
But then I fell in love with like solo singing because everything depends on you. Like as much work as you put in, you take out. Like this is how it's gonna sound. And I loved it, and I loved the Baroque singing and all of that stuff. And I started reading those theses and all of those tracts. It's just incredible. And I totally fell in love with that. But the beginning was very difficult. I compare sometimes a starting countertenor to a starting violinist.
Finding your own song.
It's horrifying. Like, so my first 3-4 years were quite miserable. I was actually living in my university, trying to find my own sound and practicing a lot and analyzing myself, because you can have the best teacher in the world, but you have to do your homework. You have to do your practicing.
But what happened? So what did the fact that you finally achieved something that you were happy of?
I mean, the thing is that like I started singing and I knew that this brings me satisfaction. So I was practicing a lot, and my first kind of dream was like to sing a concert. So I was singing those concerts and those like elderly houses, and those concerts were organized by my teacher.
That's
and
so
by
sweet.
by my pianist, and it was amazing. I mean, like singing in those like elderly places, and people were coming. In some of those places, people were looking weirdly at me because, you know, countertenor, a guy standing in front of you and singing like a woman, and very high, and it is kind of like it was back then. So like those 9 years ago or 8 years ago, not very, very common.
Did you get some strange questions? Because I remember Andreas Scholl telling us that he had in the beginning all the time questions about the fact that he is not a castrato, for instance.
Yeah, there were at the beginning a lot of those kind of things. But I think because of the technology and all of the social media and like internet in general, everybody can like quickly check what's going on, and they're more aware what's happening in this field and what actually is a countertenor, and there are more of us. So like I think people, especially now in Poland, they are very like open-minded and welcoming. I think that they just want to listen to something like that.
And you're not the first famous Polish countertenor.
I'm not.
There were other ones. Did you finally audition for the King Singers?
No, I didn't.
No, it's too late. You've passed the stage to audition. So what will happen now?
I don't know. Like I was really fascinated by them. So I went to two actually live concerts, and I got all of their signatures because I was like really obsessed. I was listening to their CDs, and still I have it on my iPhone.
Do
and
you
I
have a poster in your sleeping
room? No, I don't. But like I have a lot of music. I have a lot of their albums, and I still have a passion for Renaissance music and all of the things they did. And there is this piece called Masterpiece. It's like a combined piece which is like kind of going through the ages of periods of music, and it's absolutely extraordinary.
Does it give you the goosebumps?
Actually every single time. But the thing which I realized after listening to it like hundreds of times, it's always when they're doing the Bach cadenza. So I know that like I am the Baroque guy. I just love Baroque pieces, you know.
So from the university in Warsaw to the Aix-en-Provence Festival, I imagine there was an audition. what did happen and how did you arrive in X?
Oh la la. So the thing is that like my journey was quite long because I was studying in Warsaw. Then I entered this very good young artist program in Teatr Wielki Opera Narodowa in Warsaw, in our Grand Theater. And that program actually gave me a lot, because I met a teacher, Eitan Pesen, and Matthias Rexroth, and Eitan was the guy who actually told me, you should go out, like, you should do something, like, study somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I did a year and a half, almost, of different concerts and productions, mostly in Germany, but then I auditioned for Curtis Institute in Philadelphia, and I was in the finals, but I didn't get in. Unfortunately, they didn't need a countertenor. But then I auditioned for Juilliard. So I spent 2 years at the Juilliard school.
Which is not bad.
It's not bad. And also at the same time, I went to the summer program twice because of Edith Wiens, my teacher at Juilliard, which is called Meistersinger Academy, which is like really, really good thing. And I recommend it to everybody. Like, all the young singers should go there, because one day there is an audition for all of the directors, like casting directors, stage directors, some agents, and very important people coming to this one little town in Neumarkt in the Oberpfalz, just listening to you. And then you have this panel, you can talk with them, what is good, what is bad, like what is the thing that you should work on. And I've sung there for Alain Peru like twice, and in New York I've sung for him like five times.
So he's the head of casting of Aix-en-Provence.
He's the head of casting in Aix-en-Provence, and we actually became friends. So finally I got the chance to work in Aix, and it was absolutely amazing.
So at the moment you arrive in Aix, you also already have quite a reputation within the business, but I don't think general public knows you the way they know you today. And of course, I imagine you're talking about this in every single interview you're giving, and you're giving quite a lot right now. There is that amazing video that everyone has seen at least twice. It's this video where you are actually wearing Bermudas. I think your pianist is wearing slippers.
Yeah.
There's a kind of magic feeling with that. Tell us the story about
this. Okay, so it is this very common question in interviews, but I
very sorry about that.
No, it's not a story. Like, I mean, I love that story because it's incredible how, like, being an open-minded person can change your life, like, in a moment. Like, yeah. It can change everything, because the thing is that, like, we had our opening night of Erismena by Cavalli in Aix-en-Provence on Friday. So on Friday after the performance, of course, there is some kind of, you know, party.
A little drink,
which becomes bigger drink because it's a premiere and everybody likes to celebrate.
Yeah, everyone needs a bit of relaxing.
Exactly. So as usually we just like celebrate, and it's not just like to get wasted, but it's very nice atmosphere. Like, you know, Southern France is beautiful. And then I got a call from the administration that there is a cancellation for tomorrow's interview, and they just need somebody to like fill in 5 minutes. So if I want to do it, I'm like, yeah, of course I'm gonna sing. I love to sing, and I was already a little bit tipsy, so I was like, wow, yeah, super cool. So what time is it? And they said like, hey, it's 6. So I'm like, okay, perfect. So I went with my friends and we had some drinks, and then I woke up in the morning and I got the text. So Jakub, what are you gonna sing? And I was like, oh my gosh, I sound so low. Oh my gosh, woo.
Back to the bass repertoire.
Yeah, exactly. And I usually at those kind of events, I sing some coloratura pieces because public likes when it's like jam, jam, doom, tagadugada. Really.
I love the way you're doing coloratura.
So they like that, but this time I thought to myself, no, I'm not in a mood like that. I prefer to sing something like, I don't know, something slow and intense emotionally. So I said, okay, I'm gonna sing Vedrò con mio diletto, and please tell me if there is any dress code or something. And they were like, Jakub, it's radio interview, like nobody's gonna see you. And then I'm coming there. I had like 5 minutes rehearsal with Alphonse, who is an amazing pianist, absolutely amazing pianist. And we were dressed up like we were, you know, in Southern France. So like I had just like, it was 35 degrees at that moment. So we entered this patio, and then there is public. there are cameras set up and there is a stage, and I'm like, hey guys, but you said it's radio and nobody's gonna see me. Yeah, but like we decided to do Facebook live streaming and all that stuff. So, you know, that's the story of like me becoming like coming there to this place. But then it's a beautiful piece and we wanted to just be true to the whole composition.
So plus, you are with your Bermudas on stage for a recital and people are expecting you to be dressed properly. But on the staging of any opera, there are nude singers all the time.
All the time.
And that's not a problem. So the difference with the actual opera world is not that big.
Yeah, and also like I think it's, if I would be in a theater, of course I would dress up a little bit. But like the thing is, that was a patio and it's like 6 p.m. extremely sunny, 35 degrees, like it's just like the environment, like yeah, the atmosphere yeah, was yeah. very very kind of relaxed and cool, so I think it worked well.
it did. So after the video is actually published, how long do you have to wait, and I imagine you didn't expect anything from it, before people start actually talking about it and you understand that this thing is getting viral?
I mean, the thing is that like I got overnight like hundreds of messages on my fan page and like thousands of new likes on my fan page, and I even got a message from the director of France Musique who just said like, oh my gosh, you have like 400,000 views already, and then like, and it's growing, and then like they after like 4 days it was already 1 million on Facebook, because on Facebook people seen it like almost 3 million times. And then they posted it again on YouTube, and it has like 1.5. So it's quite a lot. I've never seen a classical video being so like boom.
This is of course a delicate question, but we are asking it quite often in relation to contribution to social media. Did you actually get paid by Facebook or YouTube for all these million views?
Nope, nothing.
Isn't there some kind of problem about that?
There is, you know, but like the thing is that if you do things like that, so if you run, I run all my social media by myself, and the problem with that is that in order to get paid, you have to be professionally involved in that, and it takes a lot of time, because yeah. building up content is easy for me because I travel a lot and I just take out my phone and boom boom do some videos, and it's super cool, and actually I have thousands of things that I haven't posted because I just don't have time. And if I would hire somebody who'd help me with that, then probably we could build something like a little, you know, little thing that like actually I could get paid for all of those things, because even on my YouTube channel there are videos which have hundreds of thousands of views, but like I'm not getting paid for that.
But that's some kind of a problem, I think.
Yeah, it is a little it bit is problem, a little but problem. Like you Let's have to say be, you have to just be more involved and waste more time, I guess, or hire somebody to help you with like getting the profit out of it.
Yeah. So this is for the nice story. Then all of a sudden you have that CD released a few months or a year later, a duet CD.
Yes.
Beautiful duet CD, but also you're signing with a big major company.
Yes, I'm super excited. The thing with the duet album is that we recorded it like in 2016, but I'm just a guest on that album. It's not my album. It's album of my friend's ensemble, Il Giardino d'Amore, and they invited me to record those arias and duets, and it's super nice, and it's supposed to be out in like late 2016, and it came out in early 2018, so that was a little bit disappointing, and also
a good timing for them.
Yeah, good timing for them, I guess. But I'm super happy that it came out actually, because also it built up some public for me to now get more people to actually be interested in my solo album, which I'm extremely excited about, because it's a very risky album, I have to say.
So tell us everything about it.
It's difficult to say everything, but I'm going to start with the fact that the research took like a year and a half almost to find all of those pieces. My really good friend, Yanis Francois, whom I hired him to like find those pieces, and we found a theme, and then he edited those pieces from manuscripts and sometimes from like those like those just shots, like photos. He actually edited those from microfilms, they call it, like, and it was extremely difficult. He found almost 40 manuscripts of amazing music, and we chose 8 of them to fit in the concept.
And what is the concept precisely?
The concept is the CD is called, the album is called Anima Sacra, and the concept is mainly to gather sacred music from the early 18th century, and to show kind of a spiritual journey. I don't want to say it's a religious album, because it's not. It's about a spiritual journey, I would say, because that's what I wanted to show with those pieces, because most of those pieces are very virtuosic, because they were already written in the beginning of the 18th century. And for example, when Carnivale della Venezia was finished, like, those composers had to find a job, so mostly churches were hiring them. So then they were like composing for churches, and they were using libretti for their compositions from some like sequences, like Confitebor, this huge motet which we found by Nicola Fago, which is extraordinary and very rare, because there are so little works for solo alto which are sacred and have this kind of orchestration. It really brings the whole orchestra. It's not like in Vivaldi's Longemala, where you have just the basso continuo and strings, which is the most like common kind of thing with those sacred motets. But this motet, 7 movements and like huge orchestration, it's something really, really rare.
I imagine the thing you had to be careful about was not to start with a basic big Handel arias recording.
This is a good thing that you mentioned that. Like, the thing is that when I sold that idea to Warner Classics, they were like, "Oh, this is a great idea.
But let's do it later.
But like, let's do it as a second CD, and then like, let's do the first one, Handel hits or like Vivaldi best, you know, things." Yeah. And I was like, "Not really. I don't want to do that for a few reasons." The thing is that everybody, like every countertenor and every like major singer who enters the business, starts with this kind of recording. I don't want to be like everyone. I want to build up my own path, and that was my dream, to like show something which I am connected with. And I sold a lot of ideas. I showed them the pieces. I showed them all of the shoots actually I did before, which I think might be good for the cover, and like the whole idea basically with this album, which I built it up with Yanis, and they took it and they trusted me. So I'm extremely happy that they actually trusted me and believed in me that it's gonna work. And the second thing that I didn't want to do this kind of Handel famous arias is that I am just starting. I'm not yet at the level of those masters who are on in the business for like 20 years already. And with those kind of albums, you are immediately compared. And I don't really necessarily want to be compared right away when I'm just starting being 27, you know?
Yeah. So a first solo recording is a bit like a baby of yours.
Especially with this kind of repertoire, yeah.
How did it feel when you actually received the first editing and that it really took the definitive form?
I mean, this is there were so many stages of like me being in my room and like kind of tearing up of happiness, because we were finishing, for example, research, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is so amazing! We have it! We have the pieces!" And then when Yanis finally sent me the edited pieces, like from the manuscripts, he actually edited them to the modern notation. So finally, I got those pieces and I could start working on them. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing." And then the next step of like meeting the orchestra and finally hearing it with the full orchestra. I mean, I was literally crying. This is something that nobody, like, I cannot compare to anything else I experienced in this world. Like, it's just, you are standing in this beautiful room in a village in Italy, in this monastery, and you see all of those people seeing like this piece first time in their lives, and it wasn't performed for like hundreds of years, and suddenly you hear it and you sing it and you are the first one, and it's amazing. And then finally when you get those edits, it's just amazing. A lot of work also, because of course we recorded so many options, so then you go through all of those pieces and, you know, second
after
second.
That's a bit of a jigsaw and a nightmare also.
Yeah, but like it's really exciting and I love to record in a way that like you just go through the whole kind of part and then you just try again, not like, okay, let's, you know, repeat this 1 second. Okay. No, it's just like I like, because then you have the whole feeling and gives the emotion. So
that's what artists are saying when they're recording, it's that it gets annoying to record every bar after every bar.
Yeah.
That you actually want the entire piece to be sung.
Yeah, exactly. So like my I love to record in a way that like you just go with the whole movement like once, twice, three times to have just the basic form of like the whole thing, and then you just do an A part, or like you separate if the piece is very long, like Zelenka is extremely long, it's like 11 minutes.
Yeah.
So then you like cut those things into like little chapters if you have to correct some stuff. But it's really interesting, and I've learned so much during that process. I can't tell you, like it's extremely a lot.
So now we've talked about the serious stuff. Now let's talk about the front cover of the CD. I would like you to explain what the veil is you are wearing on your shoulder.
So with Yanis, we started like brainstorming about the cover, and we were inspired by all of those sculptures of women covered with this white cloth. There is a lot of those kind of sculptures, like even sacred sculptures with this like just cloth and kind of, I don't know, it's so beautiful. And we did some research, we went to some museums, and then like suddenly I said, like, this is amazing, like I want to do something like that, because it gives some kind of purity and like the beauty, and also kind of a like a modern twist, because it's not the white cloth.
No,
which
it's
is covering
black, precisely.
And it's like it's a dark blue. It's kind of dark blue thing. And but I loved it. I loved it. And there are some people in the internet saying like, oh, it's just going for nudity. It's nothing to have about the nudity, but like I didn't want to be in a t-shirt because it would totally destroy the like the purity meaning of that whole thing.
Yeah, it's not nudity at all, because it's just the above. That's still quite correct. So let's finish with the way you interact on social media, because I've been following you on Instagram, and I must say it is so funny, because you know sometimes Instagram is just about ego, but you are quite involved with your community, and I mean you are a real entertainer. For instance, I learned that you needed to have a haircut yesterday and that you were very sad about it.
Oh my god!
And today I saw you dance on the floor of your room. Tell us about that.
I'm trying to like, it's just super fun for me, and my goal as an artist, as a young artist, is to bring young people to theaters, to concerts. And I'm really happy, because since I started actually doing that, it brought so much actually profit, not only to institutions that I'm working with, but also for me to see people like attending my concerts, which are super young. I don't have anything against older people, but it's just like we need younger generation to also be interested in this kind of music. And I think it is extremely interesting, but people think stereotypically, like this stereotype thinking of like classical music is like just somebody singing and like whoa, 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 whoa. You cannot understand the words and it's not entertaining. But it is, like, I'm trying to, with my Instagram, to show people like what it takes to be an opera singer. I travel a lot, I'm visiting new places, I'm meeting new people. It's all exciting, it's super exciting. And that's what I try to give to people, like just like be open-minded, be positive, and like just give some, you know, positive energy, vibe, good vibe.
There are many people who are now leaving the social media because of the aggressivity and the rudeness of some followers. Do you get support from your community?
I get a lot of support, a lot of weird stuff, but it's internet.
How do you react?
I mean, if it's really, really weird, then I do not reply at all.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had to like block some people.
Are you scared sometimes?
No, I'm not scared, because the thing is that like I'm trying to usually reply to all of my followers. So when somebody writes me on Instagram or my Facebook page, it takes some time, because like I run all my social media by myself. So like there are a lot of emails, a lot of messages on YouTube and all that stuff.
So you answer, so you know you're gonna have even more messages.
We will see. But the thing is that like I like to do that. I like interacting with my public. So like whenever I sing a concert or I'm in the performance, after the performance, I always stay and talk with the public, because I just like to know where are they from, why they are interested in that, and like what brings them to this place. So it's super nice. I'm very happy that like most of my concerts, which are happening in 2018, are already sold out. So like this is a very huge success for me too. And I think it's mostly because of the social media, which I'm running by myself, and people see that this is true me, that's me. Like I am running my social media, and it's not somebody who is hired and like walks behind me and like, oh yeah, Jakob is going to practice. No, it's me, like, you know, taking the time and like taking a photo, talking with them, and I think that's why people appreciate it. And there is also, I want to mention that there is some like hate, of course, but people gonna hate, haters gonna hate.
Yeah, but it must be tough sometimes, no?
You know, you have to just like be kind of like, this is something that I do, and it's part of my, I treat it kind of part of my life, but part of my job also. So I try to be like connected, but also have my own ground. So like I have my friends, I have my, you know, my people to talk about those things. So it's all fine.
And you look like quite a happy person.
I am happy.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.